Welcome to the Critical Few Actions to Improve Your Business podcast. I'm John Downes, and I'm here to help you cut through the overwhelm and prioritize what matters most to improve your business. Let's get started and discover the critical few actions that have the biggest impact. Today, I'd like you to meet the founder, Mari Felsberg. She's the founder of one of Australia's leading information management consultancies that provides customers with independent, vendor-neutral advice about the best strategy for managing their information. I first met Mari during COVID when I was running a weekly masterclass in adapting to the changes being thrown at us in our first lockdown. We've had many enjoyable conversations since then. Mari, welcome.
Thank you very much, John. Lovely to see you again.
So, Mari, tell me a bit about your story. What got you interested in information management and how did that morph into Astral Consulting? What intrigued you?
Okay, so I guess that as part of my background, I've always been intrigued by the patterns in nature, in business, between people, in family. Everything, I believe, is about the patterns. And I started off as a chemist, a research chemist, and chemistry is all about patterns. So it's the patterns of the different molecules, how they fit together, but the repetition in everything in nature is by the repetition of the chemical molecules that make it up. So really, information management is really no different to that. It's all about the patterns of the information and the pattern that you create when you do business that becomes your information. And the interesting thing is with all the patterns that you create, they're so unique to every business. You might think that two electricity companies would have the same patterns, but they don't. And that's their unique contribution and differentiator, is that they all do it slightly differently and it works differently for each of them. And the information outputs they have from that are also different. And so it's about understanding the similarities and the differences in information, both within your own company and within your customers, that's so important. The other thing about patents is that's what AI is all about. And AI leverages information that we create and the patterns we create to create more information. So my fascination with patterns, it just keeps on going. We've got patterns of history from the Middle Ages, you know, kind of civilizations prior to that, that keep repeating themselves. So that's what fascinates me about life and history, who we are, where we're going, who we're not going. That's my fascination. I've always had a really curious mind. I always want to know how things work and, you know, how they link together. And that's really what I find interesting about business, is all businesses work differently, and understanding that is really important. Services to them.
Yeah, and I like what you say about patterns because, I mean, you know, humans are advanced pattern recognition machines. But interestingly, AI has now become probably the most advanced pattern recognition machines based purely on the history that we actually have recorded behind us. So how did that fascination and intrigue then translate into the creation of Astral?
I guess that we all go through life in different ways and, you know, different things happen to different people. And you kind of make decisions based on where you're at different points in time.
Mm.
And I have been in the computer industry for probably 40 years plus, I think.
About the same time as me.
So the interesting thing is with your life, both professionally and privately, they really do interact together. And one of the things about myself is when I have something to deal with in life or struggle with, I always work harder and I work through things and that actually solves the problem. A lot of people wouldn't agree with that, but it works for me.
Yeah.
So I had a major trauma in my life and I was trying to work out how to move forward. And I didn't want to do what I'd done before. I'd had quite a successful career in a couple of large Australian IT companies. So I decided I'd set up my own business and see how that went. My first business was when I was at university, the first Apple came into Australia and I wanted one of those because I was very intrigued by computers. And to give you an understanding of the cost of that, at the same time we bought a house, the house cost us $35,000. The computer cost us $5,000. The house is now worth about $1.2 million. But we saw it as an investment. My first husband and I saw that as an investment in our future. I was a chemist. He was an electrical engineer. And we could see these things coming down the track. And we created a mail label program.
Oh, yes.
And at that time, you couldn't print off mail labels unless you had them all in a computer. And nobody had a computer because they only had large computers, minis.
Yeah.
But, you know, the general organization couldn't afford a computer to do that. So we, you know, kind of hiked that around a few organizations. And I think after about 3 years, we paid for the computer. We sold it to one of our customers. And then we started our second business. And our second business was providing software to the petroleum industry.
Oh.
And we did that for a little while. And we had 3 children by this stage. And the business was growing, but too fast for us to cope with. So we ended up teaming up with another company and managing those customers. They were the first 2 attempts at business. Then eventually I moved on from that company and started, you know, working for another organization. Kids grew up, you know, life goes on. And so when I wanted something to do, I thought, you know, kind of I've done all of these things. I'll start a business. I don't have any children at home. I'll start a business and see how I go. So that's how Astral started.
And what was the story behind the naming of Astral?
Oh, the name? So Astral, it comes from the Latin term. It means reach for the stars.
Yeah.
And it's about searching for excellence is the basis of the company when we started, we put together.
Yeah. And so Astral's now well regarded in the information management sector. What is information management?
What is information management? So it's basically structuring your information in a way that you can find it intuitively in your company or wherever you need to find it. And it has a lot of subcomponents, and it's more important in some industries than it is in others. But as we come to AI, it's going to become even more important. In fact, in the last couple of years, we've seen a real upkick in the number of companies that are trying to prepare for AI, so they're trying to get their information assets under control. So traditionally, we've dealt with companies that have huge stores of information assets, and they need to be compliant from an industry and government regulation perspective. So large manufacturers, mining companies, utilities, anyone that has to show that they've followed certain processes and procedures in their work really need to manage their information and have it under control. We see the same with, you know, kind of ISO certification around cybersecurity, for instance. You've got to be able to demonstrate that you've got that all documented, that it's updated on a regular basis. So you're going through these processes to make sure that the correct information is available to your staff. And so then there's an information governance component, and that's about managing the risks that you have around your information management and being able to have processes in place to manage that. So there's lots of different subsets. Records management, if you're a government organization, well, actually it applies to all businesses, but government are even more focused on managing the records that they're managing for their, you know, us as their constituents, so that, you know, they have a record of what's been done. And most businesses have some compulsory record keeping that they have to keep, like, you know, any business transaction, you need to have a record of that transaction, a record of invoicing, paying, all of those things. So,
yeah. And I guess with the acceleration of artificial intelligence over the last couple of years, it's bringing to the fore right now all of those information management issues, particularly around governance, data privacy, defense, ownership, distribution. And also then actually intelligent insights from all that data. You know, that's a fairly in-depth field which really appeals to all businesses, whether they be small or large. How did you go about building Astral?
So before I started Astral, the jobs that I'd mainly dealt with large corporates because at that stage they were the only people, you know, if I go back to the very beginning, the medium-sized businesses didn't have computers until, you know, kind of PCs became ubiquitous. So Most of my clients had always been, you know, kind of large clients, like large government clients, large mining companies, utilities, etc. So when I set Astral up, it wasn't possible to sell these services to the mid-tier. They weren't interested. They weren't there yet. They were still trying to get their accounts under control.
Yeah.
So my first client in Astral was BlueScope Steel, BHP. We did work for BHP.
So you started out pretty small.
We did start out really small. And I mean, that's a key thing. You've got to, I guess, it's a pun I know, but even though we had large clients, we weren't dealing with multi-billion dollar contracts. It was doing some specific things. So it was a controlled start. It wasn't something that we just went out and started dealing with multi-million dollar deals. It wasn't like that at all. But we always focused on the top end of town because they were the clients that could afford to pay for our services.
Yeah.
And that's fortunate. But also I learned very young that it takes the same amount of work to get a large client as it does to get a small client. So why sweat over getting multiple clients? So we've always had a fairly small number of clients relative to what people expect.
Yeah.
We had kind of large transactions, large clients, and it's easy. It's a lot easier to manage than having, you know, kind of hundreds and thousands of smaller clients.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. And I guess, you know, in the realms of information management, it's the top end of town who are most acutely aware of the scale and the breadth and the repercussions of getting that right.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I say
no, you're not an optional spend.
When we started the business, it was optional, but
yeah,
quickly learned they couldn't be optional. And the way I explain it to people is if you think of yourself and your personal computer and the information that you've got on there, and trying to find what you want to find sometimes can be a nightmare because you forget where you put it or whatever. So imagine that multiplied by 10,000 for a large corporate. How on earth do they find things if they don't have it organized? You just can't afford not to be organized these days.
Absolutely. What were some of the challenges along the way of developing Astral? You know, what did you learn from them?
So I guess the initial challenges were making sure you had enough business to pay the salaries and making sure that you didn't waste money. So initially I had a garage that had been converted to an office. So I think for about the first 2 years of the business, we operated out of the office out the back.
Yeah.
Saw people squeezed into the office. It was, yeah, quite cozy. But we also spent time in client sites, so it wasn't such a big issue. So I guess that the rule there is to just make sure that you don't overspend on things that you don't need to overspend on to start out with. And I think that that's a lesson that's continued right through the business is been managing those finances really well, understanding, you know, what the next six months is going to bring, what your expenses are going to be and what your profit's going to be, setting your goals, all of those things were learned from that initial struggle. And in that initial struggle, I think we also learned to focus on what was real. So understand who your best client was. So what's your client profile that you're looking for so that you're not running after everything that moves. Really focus on the clients where you can provide the best service for them more than anyone else in the marketplace and that client's got your name on it. And we still have that conversation internally. No, don't go after that client. We can't deliver the best value to them. They'd be better off with someone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's across all business, you've really got to understand what your market is and what's not.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
The other thing that I've learned is that every business is slightly different, as I say, but they all have common functions. And if you want to grow your business, you've got to optimize the functions within your business. So by that, if you've got a finance system, a billing system, every industry or business requires different things out of a billing system. So you need to have a system that actually suits your business, not one that suits a business. So you need to understand what your core functions are and then understand how do you optimize those. Professional services business, it's all about time. You know, kind of your major KPI is time for your staff, managing that time and manage your staff to make sure that they're profitable. but it's also we're cybersecurity certified. So that's another KPI that we have on our business. And how do we actually make sure that that's done? We have processes that people can follow for every function that they do in the business. So it's understanding at that function level, what is it your business does? How do you optimize it? And how are you, and you've got to then say, okay, and I've heard you talk about this. So what are my top priorities?
Yeah.
And you've got your three top priorities in a month, a week, a day, whatever it might be. And you focus on those things when you focus on them. And then when you're not focusing on that, you're focusing on something else. But it's about being able to isolate what it is that you're focusing on and really get that covered off.
It's important to be able to compartmentalize
as you go
through the week or the month or of the business cycle, the quarter or the year, and drill down on those critical few actions that if you did nothing else, it would be the ones that would actually make an impact on whatever you're focusing on at the moment.
Absolutely. And I guess that compartmentalizing is a really important part as a business owner, because you've got so much coming across. And when you're actually dealing with an issue, if you can't compartmentalize and ignore everything else, the issue doesn't get resolved.
No, so you just get overwhelmed.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. So that's, I guess I've learned that along the way. I really learned that through going through trauma.
Tell me a bit more.
So when I've had a couple of traumatic events happen in my life, and you can't sit there and dwell on it 24/7. So you have to learn to turn off to that and focus on whatever else you've got going at the time so that you get things done. Otherwise, you're just a mess.
Yeah.
And for me, learning that through a trauma, I've been able to apply that to business in that I can turn off to everything and do what I want to focus on.
Yeah.
To the point that I get so involved what I'm doing, the time just disappears and I miss the next meeting, because even though I know I've got a meeting, you know, kind of 15 minutes go so quickly when you're in that zone.
Yeah, when you hyper-focus.
When you're highly focused, you don't really think about anything else. You just focus on that. So I learned that through trauma, and it's just, you know, that's when I talk about it's all about, not just about work, it's about your whole life. And what I've found is, depending on what's happening in your life, the business cycle will go up and down when you've got other things happening that you can't focus as much as you need to on the business. You know, you keep going, the business keeps going, because once you've got the momentum, but you know, sometimes you're not as focused as you should be because you've got other things. And I can see the cycles in the business based on the cycles of my life. So it's interesting.
Well, isn't it interesting how they become parallel in some ways?
Yeah.
Well, they synchronize.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that I've learned is, for me, and I don't know about other people, but my personal life and my business overlap quite, you know, I don't say, oh, I'm at business from 9 to 5 and then I turn off and I do family.
Yeah.
I try and address the issues as they arise, and to do the whole lot all just gets managed together, because I find trying to differentiate them out is just too difficult. And particularly, when you've got kids, teenage kids, adult kids, old kids, they still keep coming back. You're still going to deal with those issues.
Yeah, well, I think that is the norm, and it may be unpopular, but this construct of being able to fully separate work and personal life as if it's something that can be balanced, frankly, I think it's a bit of a furphy. All we can aim to do is to manage, or better still, just enjoy and be present in our life, whatever activity we're doing. Certainly as founders and business owners and business leaders, the reality is it's, I think, impossible to separate them completely
I've had people
you're thinking about your staff at times and they have issues. And so are your staff particularly different from actually the children that you've bred? Yes, they might be by bloodlines, but you also have a sense of responsibility, or you have a sense of annoyance that they're not learning as fast as you'd like to be, whether you're talking about toilet training or whether you're talking about performance management. And whether you or the business or your family members or even your staff members are having financial difficulties, then you're still actually thinking about those things. And, you know, just because it's gotten to 11 o'clock at night and you're turning in for bed, that doesn't mean that you're going to be able to successfully turn off those ambient, noisy conversations that go on in the mind which might dissipate for a while, but they might also wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning while you're still thinking about them, or you might wake up and think about them. So I think this is actually part of being a leader and part of being a founder business owner is that, you know, your life is very full.
Yes, I would agree with that. It's
and,
always
and I don't think that's a bad thing. Actually, I think that's part of living a fulfilling life.
I agree. You know, it's interesting, isn't it? I'm actually a morning person. I've been a morning person for my entire life. So whether I like it or not, you know, I wake up at 5 o'clock this morning and the brain starts going. But I find the morning is a really good time to, all the problems come to the fore in the morning and you resolve them in the morning. You've thought about them overnight, even if you don't want to.
Yes.
But, you know, in your subconscious mostly, I think, and the ideas then flow out in the morning. So I've always found the morning the best period of my day.
Yeah.
And I've always got up and got started working quite early, and I still do. And I don't mind doing that. I quite like it.
And it's also, I'm quite similar, actually. I'm a morning person, but it's also very peaceful first thing in the morning. And there's something about a new day, which I think contributes to it. But you're right. I think we do process a lot of stuff in background overnight and, you know, not to be visualized, but certainly, I've had some real aha moments and some real thinking breakthroughs when I've been having that morning shower.
And, absolutely. In the shower, for time.
And you sort of think, oh, yeah, okay, that works. That's actually how I'm going to navigate this today. Bit of an odd John Downs insight there.
No, I have the same things happen all the time, and it's I'm very happy to, when that happens, I go, that's great. Now I know. You know, sometimes you'll spend the day working on a problem and you can't resolve it, and go off
and in the morning it's resolved.
Yeah, it gets resolved, yeah.
Yeah. So what have been some of the game changers that really changed your business for the better?
I'm just trying to think. There's been lots and lots of them, but I'm just trying to pull one out. I guess some of the big deals that we've won have changed business and enabled us to grow. COVID changed the business a lot.
Yeah.
It made us look at different ways of doing things. Everybody was in the same boat, and you're going, oh my God, what's going to happen? But we actually had won two very large pieces of business within the first, you know, people got to the end of the financial year and realized they hadn't spent their budget. So they were desperate to get somebody who could do some work for them. So we actually won two big deals around the start of COVID. And our problem was we didn't have enough people to deliver them.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to get people during COVID.
Mm.
And we had some business partners in Europe and they didn't have enough work. So we brought their people into our clients. It didn't matter that they were in Europe because everyone was remote. And they delivered it into our clients. And the beauty of that particular arrangement was that our guys here would stop working at 5:30. These guys would pick it up and work all night. Yeah. And then the next morning. And what we discovered that was really good for the business is it stopped those peaks and troughs. Mm-hmm. So even though we paid more for these resources, then our own people were 100% utilized.
Yeah.
And these people came in and did the little bit over the top, and we didn't hire. One of the challenges with professional services is that you hire people to do a job and then the job finishes and you've got the peaks and troughs. So you make the money on the rise with the project finishes and you lose all the money that you made because you've got these people that are going to sit on the bench.
Yes.
And cut that out of our business. And so we've done that since then. We've done it a lot more. So instead of taking on the staff that we need, we don't just hire people, you know, kind of that because they have to come along.
No.
We developed business relationships with organizations that have some of the skills that we need, and we skill up through those organizations. So we're not getting people coming in that we're hiring a business to do the work, not a person. And it worked then, and that's always worked for us. We've tried hiring people, and they just don't work the same. Each person, a person on their own, has their own idiosyncrasies and management issues, but a company manages the person and delivers the outcome that we've asked for. And sometimes we do that now fixed price, and sometimes we do it time materials. But we still do a reasonable component of that in our business.
Yeah.
And that enable us to make more money, basically.
Yeah. It really gives you surge capacity. And I think that surge capacity is so important because particularly in the professional services businesses, you know, they go out of business every 12 weeks if they don't sell the next project or the next gig, or they're not on a retainer. But of course, when they have to scale up, then all of a sudden it's either a lot of late nights and early mornings, or it's temporary staff, or hiring full-time staff and then knowing what to do with them afterwards. And that's just part of the joys and the challenges of the cycle of business.
And the other thing we did also during COVID was we've always had a fairly structured intern program. So probably at least half of the staff we have in the company have come through the intern program.
Yes.
But when COVID started up, we got the first, with the grant started coming through, we said, okay, so we're going to have a problem with staff. We haven't got enough staff, so let's take on extra interns. And so we took on extra interns, and we've continued to do that. So that intern program, and we work with both RMIT and Swinburne, provides our future staff. So we have them do the intern program. The ones that are good, by the time they've been with us for 6 months, we know that they're going to be there for five or six years.
Yes.
And we've got some really great staff that come through that program, and it's good for them to learn, and it develops our own people because they have to train other people. So it's got a whole lot of benefits up to the point where we've just put a program together with RMIT where we're going to have an industry-based degree. So they do 1 year full-time at university, and then they come into industry for the next 3 years, and they do 1 day a week at university while they're working in our business. And that's, we're looking at our first bit of students to come into that program starting in January next year. But those have been key boosters for the business because it means that we have a constant supply of younger people. They're all different. We've got them from, I think we've got about 13 or 14 different countries. So we sponsor some of those long-term. So some of them have got long-term residency through our program. And it's just a really good way of training the staff of the future, because that's one of the things that we recognised when we did a analysis of our business, is that one of the challenges was going to be getting enough staff and developing them to be suitable work in our business. So we've started from the ground up and it's working well.
Yeah, look, that's fantastic. On the podcast, I interviewed Jackson Yim a few months ago. And one of the reasons for that conversation was that, Jackson's been working with student intern programs with Monash University for the last sort of 10 years now. Over 80% of his staff now have been former interns. And for medium-sized businesses, it's often a way of punching above your weight when it comes to recruitment, simply because you're providing a really valuable opportunity for them to start out their career and build their resume. You're providing a really good opportunity for them to understand what it's like to move into a professional workplace, which they may have had most likely have had no previous experience. And it also gives you an opportunity to see them perhaps before they might just disappear into a graduate program in a multinational, never to be seen again.
Well, I think that's what we're going to get out of this industry-based degree, because the big companies are not prepared to do that. They want to tick the box, but they don't want to go that extra mile because this requires a bit more commitment. But we've done the first socialization of it with students, and we're getting the top students the most interested in that program.
Yeah.
They're the ones that are wanting to participate. The Dean's Scholars are at the session. And because they see that is the workplace of the future, they need to get into it as quickly as they can, because that's how they'll get their experience. And having the customers that we have, we're able to provide the interns with really valuable experience, because they're going into customers where they need to be professional. They need to learn how to write documents properly. They've got all of this high standard of delivery with large clients. And by the way, we've sent not the interns, I don't think we've sent them overseas, but fairly shortly afterwards, we have people that come in, they'll be graduates. And we've had quite a lot of overseas travel with our customers because we have multinational clients. We have the mining companies, and we've had one mining company where I think we've had people go to the Congo, Brazil, Peru, Vietnam, just all over the place.
Yeah.
And because we've rolled out programs to mining companies in those areas. Mm. And it's a great experience for them to get to be able to say, oh, well, I've only started work 2 years ago and look at me. I'm flying business class off to the Congo. We did quite a big job in the Congo and it was, you know, they speak French, the Congolese French. Mm. And so students that had a French background got the preference and, you know, they went over there and practiced their French on the Congolese and it was good.
What a fantastic career starter for any young person and what amazing opportunities. It's interesting that you mentioned that, you know, COVID actually was quite formative for you. I actually think, and I feel sad for organisations that really did it tough during COVID, but I actually think that COVID in a lot of ways was a blessing in that it actually levelled up our businesses quite a lot. You know, when I first started Deloitte just on 40 years ago, we had made an investment in video conferencing and it was one of those things, I think, around all the large multinationals that they smiled about the fact that they had $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 of investment in video conferencing rooms that never actually got used. And, you know, almost overnight, we've all become experts. Well, we don't even think about video conferencing. It's just a part of the way we do business now. But it also actually had a lot of other impacts on people's businesses. And, you know, without COVID, I wouldn't have actually met you, Mari, as part of the CEO Masterclass, as we were meeting to sort of how to figure out how to navigate this changing landscape. How did you find that process?
I felt the process really good. I'll just mention something before I go into that. My mother, who was, you know, kind of long passed away, used to have this saying. I think it was an Irish saying. And she used to say, it's an ill wind that blows no good. And, you know, it doesn't, I think, matter what negative things come to you in life. Always something comes out of it that you learn something. And COVID was no different. And, you know, and it doesn't matter, you know, if you lose a partner, you've got to start again. You've got to recreate yourself. So you become a more mature and a more accepting person or whatever it is. But everybody has that opportunity. Not everybody looks at it like that, but I think COVID was one of those opportunities. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely the way I looked at it, is how am I going to survive this and how's the company going to survive it? And what are the things that we can do now to actually make it better when we get to the other side? How do we navigate that? And the masterclass was all about that. It was a supportive program. There were lots of people that were very diverse group of people in that, you know, from people with a little three-man band to people with much larger companies that, you know, were further advanced, but everyone just worked with each other and helped each other, supported each other. And from that perspective, it was a fantastic program. I think we met once a week from memory.
Yeah, that's right. It was a 12-week intensive, I think.
Yeah. So it's quite interesting how when things don't work out or don't present themselves the way you think they should be, you can always do something to change it or make it better. But the most important thing is that you do something to make yourself see the various sides of those issues, regardless of what they might be, and you grow from it. And you don't either grow through friendship or through all different ways. And I guess that program that you were responsible for, we all grew as people during, and we've all lived on in life. And we do whatever we do, but hopefully we all reflect back on that and think what a great program it was. For me, it was a great program because running a business and not being able to, you know, you've got all these people and we did all different things to support the people. We developed a book club so that one day a week everybody could meet for the book club. And, you know, and then we had other programs, you know, quiz programs. We did, you know, kind of online. We did all these different things that we'd never done before. Just support people because, you know, they were sitting at home with, you know, their mother-in-law that they didn't like, or, you know, kind of all these different things that happened to people. And you know, you just got to be creative, haven't you?
Yeah.
Innovate.
Yeah, well, the person that we are today is the result of all of the experience that we've had up until that time. Well, and I guess part of the challenge in life is to look at all those challenges, those blessings and some of those curses, and see how it's helped us grow to become more resilient, more resourceful, and perhaps, and I would hope, a better contribution to our community.
Absolutely.
So thank you, COVID, because I've been fortunate as a result of it.
We'll get another COVID. You know, it might not be COVID, it'll be something else, but we'll get something else from cover log.
Well,
because life's full of challenges. It doesn't, you know, I used to think, oh my God, when I get old, it'll be easier, but it doesn't. Actually, it doesn't.
It's just different.
Although it doesn't, when I get older, not old, I never go at my kids when they tell me I'm old. But just, you know, as you think that you'll mature and you'll get better at doing things, but you don't without putting the effort in. And there's always, and even when you put the effort in, something else comes along. There's always going to be something that's challenging, isn't it?
Absolutely. So I hope that we don't have another COVID, but I still think it's probably a good idea to keep saying please and thank you each time you use artificial intelligence.
Oh, the whole artificial intelligence really worries me. It really does.
Yeah.
Because we've got tech companies really pushing it without thinking through the ramifications of it. Although I am on I'm also getting involved from kind of a professional community perspective.
Yeah.
So I've been involved with information governance.
Yes.
Both the global ISO standard and an Australian ISO standard that we've done around that. And at the moment, we're doing another standard, which is around how do you measure your performance in information governance. So we're putting together a standard which will be available for companies to be able to measure how they're going with information governance within their organisation. And I enjoy doing those things. They can be hard work and they can be frustrating because it takes quite a while to get them to go from start to finish. But it's interesting the different people that you work with in those. There's a lot of government people involved and a few private companies and a few larger companies. But it's what I've noticed with it, it takes time and you've just got to be prepared to take the time because everybody who's doing it is volunteering and they all have lives and things go right and things go wrong in their lives and they can do it sometimes and they can't do it other times. So it's not a, hey, then we sit down and it gets done. And then you've got to get everyone to agree to everything, which is an interesting challenge that you normally get through.
And I think that's I actually think that taking time, particularly with things like international standards, which are quasi-regulations in
some
ways.
Well, they become more eventually.
They become more.
They drive the law to catch up with things,
And so regardless of the nature of working with volunteers, that gestation period, I think, is actually important from the point of view that it's not just a shot from the hip. It's actually something that's actually been considered. It's been reflected.
Yeah.
Are you looking to pinpoint the areas that will make the biggest impact on your business? Check out the Organization Performance and Value Diagnostic. This powerful tool lets you evaluate your business on multiple facets and provides email reminders to keep you on track. Head over to criticalfewactions.com.au and get started now. So, Murray, where do you see your business going from here?
So what we've done with the business is since COVID, we actually have more of we've combined the information management with managed services. So what has happened is that people put these systems in and they don't have the internal understanding or processes to drive, not all businesses, but quite a few businesses. And they're also, you know, they have people that have a depth of understanding and then they move on and there's nobody to replace them.
Yeah.
Recognizing that this becomes a problem for organizations because you have to be able to maintain these systems long term. You don't just put them in and say, go away and it's all done now. And so
it's only just started.
Yes, exactly. In recognizing that's a challenge for our customers, we've developed a managed service offering. And that is now probably about 60% of our business.
Wow.
Is managed service. And what that has done is it gives us an annuity revenue as well. So these managed service contracts clearly don't go for 1 or 2 or 3 years there. Some of them are 5 years. We've even got 15 years. So some of them are, and so that gives us a really good foundation for our business. It gives us a good foundation for developing our people, training our people, because you could put them through a client and they'll get one kind of experience, put them into another client and they get another kind of, because they're all different types of systems. We're not limited to one type of system.
Yeah.
And we're finding that's really changing the nature of the business. It's allowing us to put a lot of process in around how we deliver. It's enabled us to plan long term.
Yeah.
Because we know that we've got this business. So instead of it being a professional services business where you're getting new contracts every year or every 6 months, we've got a foundation of contracts that go year on year. So that's made a huge difference to our business. And that side of our business will continue to grow. We're seeing more and more demand for that in the marketplace as people recognize that it's a specialist service. They don't necessarily have the know-how in their organization.
Yeah.
They have components of it, but they don't have
a full suite
and the requirements. Mm. So they might have the technical understanding, but the technical people don't have the business understanding. So we come in with both technical and business.
Yeah.
And we tend to nurture the organization and develop their skills further, but we ensure the continuity of that solution.
That's quite an innovation to your business model.
It has been.
To effectively productize as effectively what was a service business. And that's going to fundamentally change the valuation multiples that any business would have going forward because of that annual recurring revenue or that average monthly revenue that is going to continuously grow, but also provide, as you said, that stability of income stream, again, buffering the service, the professional services business peaks and troughs as projects start up and step down. That's a really fantastic innovation to your business model.
Yeah, that started probably about 5 years ago. We started developing that. We won some business with one of our clients and we kind of evolved all of the components that we needed to deliver that business.
Yeah.
There have been a number of tenders out over the last couple of years, specifically asking for that around information management.
Yeah. So that will have required quite an investment in building a managed services platform, yeah?
It has, yeah. We've done that in the last. So the initial managed services platform, we managed the client's platform.
Yeah.
But we managed the whole infrastructure on that platform. The next one, we did the whole lot. So we did, we outsourced everything. So the client doesn't do anything. We've got it all, that runs all running on Microsoft Azure.
Yeah.
And then we've got a few others where they manage things. They provide the Azure, but we manage the actual solution and that the infrastructure for the solution on their Azure environment or their private Azure cloud. We can do whatever people want, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've noticed a big, you know, people started by putting these applications on the vendor's cloud.
Yeah.
And they developed problems with that because the vendor couldn't get away from the vendor.
Yes, it was lock-in technology.
Yeah. So people are going more for a private cloud within their own environment, whether that's AWS or Azure, and we're able to do both.
Yeah. So that, again, that sort of reinforces that vendor agnostic approach.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've always been vendor agnostic. It's not an easy line to take because most vendors want you to
saddle up.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, it adds a lot more value, though, to a client. So what we normally do is we work with the client to what they want rather than recommend. We'll recommend things based on what other products they've got, et cetera, but mainly it's really about what's the directions the client take and what's going to fit into that environment rather than anything. And we just know all the products because of that, which makes a big difference.
Yeah. Well, again, I guess that comes back to, you know, that learning that we talked about. You talked about cost management, but after you talked about cost management, the thing that you really honed in there was understanding who is our best client that we can serve the best to meet their needs.
Exactly.
And that, I think, is still the foundation of every successful business, understanding who your best client is.
How
can you serve them best and how are you best to serve them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other interesting learning that I've had going back to that is about people. Because every business is about people.
Yeah.
And how do you optimize the development of your people, both from a personal and a professional perspective? And again, during COVID, I found an application that it's based on psychology and it uses the psychological makeup of people to determine how they can develop and grow.
Right.
And I was very fortunate in that my daughter went to Geelong Grammar from when she was a small child. I needed, when I had her, I didn't have, in the first couple of years I had a partner, but her father passed away. And I was running Astral, so I had to have somewhere where I could have her in school for the day, looked after. So I chose that. And when she was there, they just started looking at a thing they call positive education.
Right.
And positive education is based on, you know, kind of psychological about how people learn, etc. And this application that we use in the business is exactly the same. It's based on the same psychological, you know, from global leaders. Like, I don't know whether you've heard of a woman called Carol Dweck. She is the woman who's on about, you know, kind of if you want people to grow, you develop their positive points.
Yes.
And if that's the foundation of her psychology. Yes. So this program has an assessment where it assesses people, and it says that everybody is one of four different groups. It's a bit like whatever, yeah, the traditional ones, then Myers-Briggs
and DISC and so on. Yes.
DISC, yeah, yeah. But it has another layer on top of that. It says, yes, you have a way of learning and looking at things. However, you can grow and develop so that you can see how another person might look at that. And you change the way you communicate with people based on your understanding of how they work. Yes. And so you can, and they call it REACH. The program's called REACH. And so you can broaden your reach to communicate with people who are working with you, for you, against you, whatever, to understand how they think and how they communicate, and to optimize your communication to fit in with what how they communicate.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. And they have you can do this assessment on a regular basis to track how your people are growing. And it's been very interesting to watch how people have broadened their reach since they've been focused on the program. You can also, they have a cultural assessment, so you can look at how the company's growing,
yeah,
and how they, where they sit culturally compared to all of the customers that use Reach globally. So it assesses you against the top 10 and you can go up, you can go down, whatever, but it enables you to do that measurement and understand the areas where you need to improve culturally as an organization. But then in the last couple of years, they've also brought in an AI component to this, and it's called Reach Management or Leadership, I think it is. So as a manager, you can look at the profile of your staff and you can ask the system a question and say, I've got Fred and I want to get him to do this, and he's, how should I approach it? And it will give you a way to approach it. So it enables you to leverage the whole program that you've got there and where a person, what their profile is and where they sit, to work better with them, so that you, and that develops you as a person, but it also develops them.
Yeah.
And so it's all about that self-development, group, team development, organizational development.
Yeah.
And I started using that program during Reach. I found that during Reach as well.
Yeah.
During COVID as well, sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's been, had an interesting impact on the organization.
Yeah. Sounds like it's very much based in positive psychology, but also in based on improving everybody's emotional intelligence and their EQ.
Absolutely, yep. Very much. And it, you know, I mean, it has its own training material that comes with it.
Yeah.
And normally organizations get somebody externally to come in and deliver the training program. And the company has people that can come in and do that. But I decided I wasn't going to do it that way. So what I did is, being a bit different, I decided that I was going to leverage it even further. So I got internal people to deliver the program.
Fantastic.
So if you were one of my staff, I'd say, I want you to deliver this program, and it might be body language. So they've got a whole lot of material on body language. I don't want you to go away and find any more material. Just use this material, pick out the things that you think are important, and present it back to the group.
Yeah.
So everybody in the company has done that because, you know, I think that training is a really good way for people to develop their communication skills. And so we would have Reach lunches. So we'd have a topic, and for 4 weeks, we'd have the same topic, and the person who was delivering the program would deliver the program. We'd serve sandwiches or something, but not much, for lunch. And everybody who wanted to come could come, or we could say to people, we think you really need to go to this one if we want to do it. But it was, and everybody understands the whole Reach program. They all know, oh, you're a driven person, you're a coach, you're a, they have the terminology, and people know what each other is and how they need to talk to people. And so it's a really, it's a good, friendly, cultural building, I think, program.
Yeah, helping people understand themselves, but also how to work more effectively with other people.
That's understand themselves fantastic. And everybody else.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting because some people have a very low reach and they don't really grow very much, because I don't think that some people are really self-aware of the impact that they might have.
Yeah.
And other people are very self-aware. And it's just interesting to see the difference.
That's part of those blessings of continuums that we seem to have.
Yeah. And it doesn't really matter. As long as people take on board what they can, use what they can. And it's like I'm trying to teach one of my children at the moment that feelings just are. They're not right. They're not wrong. You just feel a certain way. And if you address your challenges that way, you know, you're not trying to tell somebody that they're wrong if they're saying certain things. Just, it makes me feel like this.
Yes.
And I really don't want you to do that if you can help it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that what you're doing is wrong. It's just, this is what it makes me feel like.
Yeah.
Because I learned a long time ago this philosophy that feelings are not right or wrong. They're just, and everyone has different feelings based on their upbringing, their life experience, lack of life experience, how they're treated by their parents, how they went at school. There's all kinds of things that impact your feeling.
Absolutely. All of a sudden, I'm thinking about Rumi's poem about the guest house, which talks about feelings that come and go. You might find it interesting if you haven't experienced it before.
I haven't. No, I haven't seen that one before.
If you really want to kick off your strategic planning and work in a supportive environment with other CEOs and leaders, the CEO Masterclass in Strategic Planning and Implementation is for you. This 10-month small group course helps you craft your strategic plan, present it to a group of peer investors, and develop a habit of monthly implementation. Our waitlist is open now at criticalfewactions.com.au.
Marie, if you were going back in time and talking to your younger self just starting out, what advice would you give young Mari?
Probably when I was younger, I was more judgmental. And the biggest thing I've learned in life, I think, is not to think that someone else thinks like you. You think in a certain way and you think everybody else just thinks the same, but people don't.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing that I've learned in life. And that's where I see people making mistakes, because they think in a certain way, they expect that another person would think the same. And they might get angry with that person because they behave differently because they don't think that.
Yeah.
So never presume that somebody is thinking like you're thinking.
Yeah.
Is, I guess, the biggest bit of advice I give my younger self,
yeah,
rather than the judgmental one thing.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Don't project your opinions and behaviours and thought processes onto somebody else. And I guess final question, Mari, if a CEO is looking to develop their business based on your experiences, what critical few actions should they start tomorrow if they did nothing else?
Okay. I would say that you need to understand what each person in the business brings to the business and what they don't bring.
Yeah.
So you might need to do some development of people if you want to grow your business. You need to understand what your business is and what it isn't. Maybe processes. Have you got a way of repeating yourself in the business is where I'm coming from. You can't grow your business if you're not growing your people.
Yeah.
So I guess that to me that would be the critical. And I guess if I look at that, I probably asked myself that same question 5 years ago and said I need to develop more people. I looked at how do you develop the people? Well, you have to, you can't just bring people in. That's, people do that. But the problem if you do that is you stand on the toes of the people who are already there.
Yeah.
So you've got to look at how do you develop the people that are there and from the bottom up, not from the top down.
Yes.
And because then if you give the people that are there the experience that they need, which is to develop people, because that's what they've got to do too.
Yeah.
Is if they want to grow, they've got to develop people underneath that. It's a traditional model of companies. So it's about understanding what you've got, what you haven't got, and how you're going to develop your team to grow the business, because that's the only way the business is going to grow. If you do it all yourself, not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
So, that would be my critical action is work out how you're going to grow your team.
How to grow your team. And I think underpinning that also is actually having your processes clear.
Well, you can't grow the team if you haven't got processes, because people don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I'm a very process person.
It's all about the patterns, Barry.
Yeah. And unfortunately, not everybody thinks the same.
Well, that's all right, because they're allowed to feel their own weight.
Yeah. But my thing is, okay, so you don't understand what I'm trying to do. You try and do it. Let me see what happens. Anyway.
Absolutely. Well, we're the product of all of our past experiences, and let's hope some of them were good ones.
Yeah.
Barry, it's been an absolute delight to share this time together. I really enjoyed the conversation, and also I love the interchange of the ideas and the experiences. So thank you for making the time for me.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Critical Pure Actions podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and grab the downloadables from the show notes. And if you found this episode helpful, I'd really appreciate it if you share it with your peers and your team. Stay focused and take action. The Critical Few Actions podcast, including show notes and links, provides general information only and is not individualised business advice, nor can it be relied upon as such. You must take responsibility for your own advice, decisions, and actions.